everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown. We are now caught up. Huzzah!
I'm Kenny, joined by Sunday. I'm so excited to be caught up because we've been so behind. The schedule just got all messed up.
I need to get more... I need to remember that when I go away for a WCPW weekend that, like, it throws things out of whack. So I need to probably, like, remember that we need to record something before I leave or something.
Yeah.
But it'll be fine.
We'll work it out. We're already making plans to get, you know, WrestleMania stuff done beforehand. We're on the ball now.
We're levitating on that ball.
Yes.
If you are, obviously you're listening to us in the main feed, but we also have our Patreon page, which is now genuine, all cards on the table. We had our old VIP service. We had, I think it was 95 subscribers at that point. I think it was something like that. And we'd come up with the idea of doing a new one and doing a Patreon. And like, as of right now, I'll give you the live tally of what we're at. I know what it was about an hour ago, but I just want to double check. We're currently set at 302 patrons, which is lovely. So, thank you to everyone who's done that. If you've not, WrestleMania season is the best time to do it. We have a lot of interviews coming up, on WrestleMania season, and the good thing for you guys on Patreon is that we're going to be releasing those interviews earlier to you. So you get to hear them earlier, and you're also going to get the full versions rather than the sort of condensed version that will go on the main show. Also, we'll talk a little bit about the sad wrestling deaths that have happened. One of them is George the Animal Steel, and he actually did a one-hour interview in 2012 with Inside the Ropes that I'm currently sourcing. So that's going to be up on Patreon soon as well. And also, we have the In Your House Final Four review, which Sandra and I did yesterday. So that's up there. Thoroughly recommend checking that one out, where you can hear us wax lyrical about the four-way between Bret Hart, Steve Austin, Undertaker, and Vader, which, if you've not seen it, get on the network and watch it. It's fantastic.
Even if you don't subscribe to Patreon to listen to the review, watch that match. It's really, really good. And I'm saying that about something the Undertaker did.
You know how much that pains her.
It does.
So patreon.com/insidetheropes. Various options there of what you want to donate. There's a $1 option where you get a WrestleMania 6 review that Robert and I did, where, good God, sometimes you think you're making a funny gag and then you don't realise that you're actually referencing 9/11. But you also get the show notes for Sandra's Retro Raw Rundown and Retro pay-per-views. If you go up to $3, you get all that.
I think the $1 level has the Robert and David Wrestle Kingdom review too.
It does. We put that out for the $1 level as well, so you've got that. The $3 or more, you get all that, plus you get interviews that we try to put up every week. We're trying to source all the old interviews because somebody hacked us and we lost all of our shit, so it's hard to get everything back. But I'm fairly confident that we're going to be able to get most of it back, so we'll be able to post most of the interviews soon. We also will have the brand-specific pay-per-view rundown. So Sandra and I did a Elimination Chamber review, which is on there if you pay $3 or more. David and I will be doing a Fastlane one soon, etc., etc. You can go up to $5, and then you get the monthly pay-per-view rundowns like the In Your House Final Four one. You also get VIP specials by people who have pledged $50 or more, and there's other special stuff that goes up now and then too. $7 or more gets you all that, plus weekly episodes of classic ITR. We started Inside the Ropes in January of 2012, so every week an old episode from 5 years ago this week goes up, which Sandra puts up, so I never know when she's putting them up.
I put them up 5 years since they've aired. So, like, for instance, on February 23, I put up the February 23 episode.
Now, there will be one episode missing from our archives. It is the lost episode, and it's basically because we used to record at this student radio station and their equipment malfunctioned. So we don't have that episode. But, you know, it is what it is. And then if you go to $50 or more, that's basically where you can choose any topic you want within reason for us to podcast about. And you can choose your host if you want me and Sandra, if you want Sandra and David, you want me and David, let us know. We've got kind of a bit of a backlog right now. David and I are getting together to do a Starrcade 98 review. Robert and I are getting together to do a SummerSlam 2002 review. Sandra's got a Lucha Underground one to do. But we are getting on them. You know, once you donate, please do allow us a few weeks to get the ones done for you. Yeah, so that's the Patreon thing. I know it was long, but I felt like I've not really plugged it properly in a while. So that's Patreon.
That is Patreon. I appreciate it on Twitter. Someone got in touch and said, you know, hey, I signed up for the $5. And then another person said, oh, you should sign up for the $7 level because the Royal Ramble is totally worth it. Plus the classic content is good. So then that other listener was like, okay, sold. And they went up to $7. And that was just really cool.
You've essentially bought Sondra McChicken sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what you've done. And Sondra needs to eat. So.
I do. I've been told that I need to eat. I've been told this for years.
So, there you go. Very sad news in wrestling. There's been 3 wrestling deaths since we last podcasted, which is not great. Nicole Bass had the very short run in ECW and WWF. She passed away at age 52. Really kind of sad case with her because she came into WWF at a time where in pop culture it was not really accepted or embraced to look different, especially if you were a woman. And she kind of suffered from that, sadly. I mean, she was dog shit in the ring, but that, you know, that doesn't mean that as a person she should have been held to task on her looks. But she passed away. George the Animal Steele passed away, age 79. He was a big star. Like I say, we're going to have a review up with him soon as well. And then Ivan Koloff has passed away, age 74. And I always remember hearing a good story about when Ivan Koloff beat Bruno Sammartino for the WWF title, and Sammartino had held the belt for literally years. Like, I think it was like 7 years he'd held it for.
It was a really long time.
Yeah, and Koloff beat him, and somebody who was in the arena had said that there was just a silence in the arena. Nobody knew what to do. I mean, can you imagine someone holding a title for 7 years? Like, the only thing I can compare it to is kind of like the Undertaker streak.
I was just going to say, it had to be that shocking. I mean, 7 years, that's longer than most runs that people have.
Yeah, that 7 years is longer than Steve Austin's run on top in WWF.
Yeah.
That sad to hear they passed away, but that's that. So I guess
I love George the Animal Steele in the movie Ed Wood.
He was very good in the movie Ed Wood.
He was.
There's a very, very interesting video. I don't know if it's still on YouTube. I'll try and find it. Somebody was at WrestleMania 12 and they'd taken a camcorder and they basically hung around the hotel for the weekend. So they have all these like videos of wrestlers interacting and stuff at the hotel.
That sounds really interesting, actually. Yeah, creepy camera kind of a situation? Like, were they complicit?
Yeah. it was creepy.
Okay. I mean, it still sounds interesting, but...
I'll still watch. But I didn't realize that George the Animal Steele was an agent in 1996.
Oh, was he?
So,
oh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So there you go. George the Animal Steele, I guess the only real kind of, like, modern era stuff that you would know him from is he faced Macho Man Randy Savage at WrestleMania 2 for the Intercontinental Championship, and he's the only wrestling superstar to ever have... it's not real, but it's to have actual hair on his action figure's back.
Like his action figure was fuzzy?
Yep.
That's amazing. Do you have that action figure?
Not anymore. I did have it.
Oh,
but I'll buy you one.
Okay.
And you could just have the hairy action figure of George the Animal Steele.
Why wouldn't I want the hairy action figure of George the Animal Steele?
Why would you not? But we are here to talk about Raw episode 197, the night after the Final Four. Maybe the most eventful Raw so far that we've had. Just stuff all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
So overall, before we get into the show, what did you think of this episode? Because obviously Raw Thursday was a slog for you, mm-hmm. which you're trying to hold against me, which I don't think is fair. But like, there's that. And then you obviously watched Final Four. How did the fallout from Final Four in a general sense work out for you?
I liked the fallout from Final Four. This was much better. I enjoyed this episode of Raw because, well, I mean, first of all, there was no interest, so I got kind of annoyed, but it started with Psycho Sid's music, so I couldn't be that annoyed, right? Because it starts with Psycho Sid's music. And it's odd because even from the opener, I was like, Psycho Sid versus Bret Hart, this is the opener? What is going on? Little did I know the chaos that would ensue.
Now, going into the show, what did you know about this show?
Nothing. Because I had it in my head that Bret Hart was going to win this. So I had no idea of anything that went on. None whatsoever.
Now, apparently, there's a rumor going around. I don't know if it's true, but I did want to bring it up. Apparently, the original plan for the Final Four was for Steve Austin to win the Final Four, and then for him to drop the belt to Sid the next night.
Oh, really?
But they changed it and made it Bret, because then they could add the story out of Austin screwing Bret again to go to WrestleMania. So that's just another layer to the ever-changing plans of 1997.
See, I had it in my head for some reason, and I don't know where this came from, because I've seen the match, but I had it in my head that their WrestleMania 13 match was for the title.
I think it's mainly because you never hear about the other match.
No.
Like, it's just so it stands to reason that you probably just think, well, that's the match everyone talks about, so that must have been the title match.
Yeah, like it seemed that it was for the title, so I was very thrown off when they kept talking throughout the show about the Undertaker going on to face the champion, because I was like, that doesn't happen though.
And I guess the other interesting part of it is, like, if Shawn Michaels had not got injured, and you can decide for yourself whether I'm using inverted commas or not, like, the Steve Austin Bret Hart thing at WrestleMania 13 is so iconic. Like, I don't think it would have stopped Steve Austin from getting to the top, but there's a couple of things that happen in wrestling, you kind of like, if that hadn't happened, what would have changed? Like,
well, it seems like that's kind of the story of Steve Austin's career.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole curtain call thing, right? Like if Triple H had won King of the Ring 96 instead of Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm. And then if Vince hadn't done the Montreal Screwjob, we wouldn't have got Austin versus Vince.
Right.
So there's a lot of stuff. And then also, you know, had he not got injured at SummerSlam, maybe he would have been propelled up the card sooner, and he wouldn't have got the Tyson thing. And this whole, yeah, you're right. He's probably the one that applies to most in terms of, you know, one thing could have changed his whole career path. But we did kick off with Sid. And I know this is something you don't really care about, Sandra, but, like, I love the aisle way. I love the way that it, like, curved round. So
oh, yeah.
Like, turn a corner. And, like, the big R.A.W. just looks so good, all squished together. JR tells us that Dr. James Andrews, the orthopedic surgeon, is going to be with us later on. And he said, with good news or bad news, depending on your perspective, which I wrote down, aka, if you hate Sean, it's bad news. If you like him, it's good news.
Basically, yeah. It's weird because he keeps saying throughout the show, you know, it's good and bad news about Shawn Michaels. It's not bad news because on Thursday, Raw Thursday, they led us to believe that Shawn Michaels was done. Like, they treated it like a retirement. So later on when we find out the news, it's like, this isn't that bad. It's going to be okay. I just have written down, oh, great, we'll have an update on Shawn Michaels. I was so eager to hear more about him.
Sid's coming out. People are going crazy for him. He's just, you know, fist pumping people, shouting, who's the man? They say on commentary that the winner of the match is going to face The Undertaker at WrestleMania for the title, which makes sense given that Undertaker was also screwed last night from Steve Austin because he was one of the last two in the match. Steve Austin's interference, because obviously, like, the point that you brought up on the pay-per-view review, Taker, I guess, pretty much could have had the match won with the Tombstone when Austin grabbed Bret off of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, storyline-wise, it does make sense to do that. But did you think straight away that the fact that it was Bret versus Sid as an opener, that there was something fishy going on, or did you just think they're doing it first?
I thought, why is this the opener? That seems weird. But I didn't necessarily think that it was anything fishy because I don't really know what to expect from 1997 Raw a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they might just open with this and have something happen. I don't know. But, I mean, it seemed like it was a weird decision to have it be the opener for sure.
Jerry Lawler, in a lovely bit of storyline continuity, was getting angry that his home state liked Bret Hart, which made me laugh. Because obviously they feuded.
Yes, they did.
So before any, so Bret Hart comes out, just Sondra, he is 40 years old here.
How in the world is he 40 years old here? He looks incredible.
He looks younger than John Cena does now.
I mean, I would say he's about on par with John Cena, but...
I think John Cena is a lot more monkey-esque.
That's fair.
I think that is something that should be brought to people's attention.
That is entirely fair. In reactions and looks and everything.
But before the match can even start, Steve Austin runs out and ruins the match. He brawls with Bret. Sid hits Austin with one of the best, I don't even know what you call it, like a chop punch.
It's like when, yeah.
What would you call it?
I don't know what to call it. It's just so very Sid.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just everything Sid does is just so Sid, basically.
Mm.
I love him. I love him so much. But Steve Austin does take out Sid's knee. He chop blocks Psycho Sid. Loads of people have to break this up. It's all very exciting.
Yeah, so basically Sid chop blocks, Austin chop blocks Sid after Austin is chop punched by
yes.
Sid. And then Bret and Austin are brawling, and it just cuts over to Sid when the referee's trying to help him. He just shouts, "Stop! Leave me alone!"
And he's yelling at the camera. He's going, "Damn it! Damn it! Damn it!" And Psycho Sid is just the best thing. I love that Psycho Sid swats away the cameraman, because Psycho Sid versus camera is my favorite feud in WWF at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So good. So then... Sid is kind of so the whole story is, you know, they're trying to maybe let the match happen, but Sid's limping, and even Lawler's like, I think they should get a few minutes, you know,
yeah.
to like
he needs to compose himself and like see if his knee is all right. They keep making allusions to Shawn Michaels. What if Psycho Sid has the Shawn Michaels situation going on? It's like, fucking Shawn Michaels, can't he just be not mentioned for 2 seconds? But
No,
apparently he can't not be mentioned for 2 seconds because they replay his speech again.
Mm-hmm. As always. But you also forgot, Sondra, don't dare miss this.
What did I miss?
Sid is limping. And what does he say that is caught on camera?
Something about, like, you took out my fucking knee? What? You have it. You know the line.
The exact quote is, "The motherfucker hit me in the leg, asshole!" And you can hear it. Like, because I heard it and I cackled and then rewound it and be like, did I hear that? Like, did I hear him say that? No, that's what he said. That's exactly what he said. And then we got more clips of Sean forfeiting the belt. Do you have any other thoughts on Sean forfeiting the belt now that you've seen it again for the sixth time?
Oh, gosh. Can we just be done with him forfeiting the belt? I get it. He's not the champion anymore. He lost his smile. Go fucking home and go away off my TV, please.
So then we get the clips of Shondon thing, and then we get the WWF magazine stills of the pay-per-view main event with a really mental shot of Vader's eye.
Yeah.
And then, Sondra, we have a backstage promo with Sid.
Yes. Yes, we do. Kevin Kelly interviews Psycho Sid, and Sid's like, "Shut up! I'm gonna tell you something right now! I'm gonna make it simple! Not even if my leg was broken!" And this is my favorite line, right? "Not sleet, snow, rain, or hell water! Or Stone Cold Steve Austin will stop me from getting to my destiny. And that is becoming the World Wrestling Federation champion! And that statement says that I am the man, and I am the master, and the ruler of the world." Not sleet, snow, rain, or hell water. He is the best.
Or Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Or Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin joins the ranks of sleet, snow, rain, or hell water. Can you imagine if Stone Cold Steve Austin had actually been called Chili McFreeze? He would fit in with the weather.
It's just, I just love the idea he's like sleet, snow, rain, hell water, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I just love the idea he put that promo together.
Yeah, I know. It's fantastic.
He's the best. So we then cut back to the arena. Well, we quickly cut to a shot of like downtown Nashville or something where an elderly Hispanic man is singing country music.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And Jerry Lawler says, "Is that the Honky Tonk Man?" Honky Tonk Man is your cousin, and he's not Hispanic. What are you doing?
Wait, that's his cousin?
Yep, real life cousins.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
There you go.
It actually kind of makes sense. They're both deplorable.
They're both deplorable. Who's more deplorable?
Oh gosh, Lawler probably.
So up next we have the Wild Man, Mark Meadow and Sable come into the ring. Comcher kind of telling the story of her attitude change. They show you the footage of her kicking The Undertaker and kicking slapping Lee Cassidy.
My favorite thing about Sable's attitude change is that I'm guessing they realize her face can't emote properly, so they were like, how can we signal this? Sunglasses. They had to add a prop.
And I love that they were like, let's dress her like Pam Anderson from Barbed Wire, just to give the illusion of sex.
Right.
So she comes out with Meadow. What's interesting to me, just, and I don't know whether that, maybe this has happened before and I've just noticed it, but this was the first time that I really felt like the camera was more on Sable for the entrances and everything than Meadow. Like, there's a point where he goes up to the top rope to kind of do his whole, like, I'm wild thing. And the camera literally zooms through the middle ropes to Sable.
Yeah, I didn't really notice it, but you're right. They're definitely showing Sable quite a lot. Like, the focus is definitely on her. And they showed footage of her kicking The Undertaker and then footage of her slapping Leaf Cassidy. I was really disappointed that the footage of her kicking The Undertaker was sans sound effect. Like, that thwack when she kicked him that they had last week.
It's great. I did mean to say earlier that at this point, WWF have officially dropped the Razor and Diesel characters.
Have they gone?
They're only going to be competing in Mexico because the AAA agreement with WWF is that they send some WWF stars, so they're sending Razor and Diesel.
Razor and Diesel. Oh, bless them. Poor Razor and Diesel. I miss Diesel, kind of. I don't miss Razor quite as much.
Also, something that was, he's not on this show, so I'll just bring it up here before we move on to the match. When I was watching the pay-per-view and I was watching the Final Four, I was very impressed at how Vader was able to do the over-the-top rope bump for after the low blow. And according to Dave Meltzer, it was because Vader, in early 97, was sent to Duke University's weight loss clinic. And he was given a nutritionist to put him on a diet, and he lost 40 pounds.
Oh.
So that was why he was able to be more, you know, there on the pay-per-view. He was able to do more. So.
Well, I mean, Vader's pretty incredible. I mean, Vader hitting moonsault, well, not hitting moonsault, he keeps missing them, I suppose. But Vader going for moonsault and doing moonsaults is pretty impressive. Because Vader's huge.
Mm-hmm. But he was more agile in the Final Four match than he had been in quite a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess, and it's hard to tell that he's dropped 40 pounds because he's a mammoth man.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's a mastodon, yeah. Kenny.
He is a mastodon. So we get Wildman Mark Meadow in the ring. Then Farouk comes out from up at the top of the crowd. He is at the top of his kingdom, apparently. And the Nation of Domination salute him. We're getting a one-on-one match with Savio Vega and the Wildman Mark Meadow, Sandra.
It took me a long time to figure out which member of the Nation of Domination was actually wrestling because they don't say.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's not until Savio Vega has his jacket off so you can see his, you know, Savio Vega across his back that I actually knew Savio Vega was wrestling Wildman Mark Meadow. And it's, you know, it's definitely a match.
It is. And then the big spot is when one of the PG-13 guys tries to put the boots to Meadow. Sable just kicks him across the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a weird thing where, like, so the Nation of Domination, well, Crush in particular, is, like, going after Sable. And Sable runs in the ring, and that apparently causes a DQ.
Because she gets in the ring to, like, get away from them or something.
Yeah.
Well, do they do the DQ before or after everybody else kind of gets in the ring, too?
Because it was as they were getting, but nothing had happened yet.
Right.
Like, I feel the refereeing here was lax, is what I'm saying.
I feel like the refereeing is always lax. It's always really shit.
Mm-hmm. But Meadow's protecting on the corner, and then, the glory that is Ahmed Johnson is back.
Still wearing his pajamas from hospital, I believe.
What is he wearing, Sandra?
Imagine
that Stevie Wonder is listening to this podcast and he needs to be explained of what Ahmed Johnson is wearing here.
Well, it's this sort of weird, like, what shade would you call that? Like, what color is that outfit? Because it's not quite salmon. It's like salmon, I think it's almost, and dirty, like, purple had a baby or something.
I think it's like, if you had like a white shirt and you put it in the wash with like a purple towel and a red top, your shirt would come out the color of Ahmed's oversized outfit.
Yeah, and it's basically, it looks like pajamas or something, because it looks like a very soft material. It's not a tracksuit.
Very oversized.
Yes.
And then he has black boots on. But you know the thing is, like, say what you want about Ahmed Johnson. His promos make no sense, you can't understand him, but I believe Ahmed Johnson 100%.
Ahmed Johnson looks like he's pissed at the Nation of Domination, and he is going to take them out with a 2x4.
I don't believe I'm watching a character here. No. I believe I'm watching Ahmed Johnson.
Well, I've listened to the Ahmed Johnson interview. I don't believe I'm watching a character either.
Two parts, ladies and gentlemen. 3 hours of Ahmed Johnson.
Subscribe on Patreon for $3 or more.
We'll give you a refund. No, we won't give you a refund.
It's glorious. So, I love the Ahmed Johnson interview. Almost 3 hours of it.
Because when I sat down to do that interview, I thought we were going to go an hour. And it did not go an hour.
You didn't realize how intrigued he would be by Scottish culture.
No, I... Yeah, there's a lot of questions. in the end, basically, obviously, Mark Merrow... Is it Merrow that wins by DQ?
Because the national... Does it matter?
Who cares?
I don't DQ know. Finish. DQ. There's DQ a DQ finish. Finish. Something, it made me laugh really hard for some reason when, like, he runs Crush and Savio Vega together, Mark Merrow does, and JR's like, meeting of the minds, so to speak.
What minds?
Yeah.
We get a Bret Hart promo backstage where he's kind of talking about, you know, he's going to take on all challengers and he's not going to worry about Steve Austin. He's going to look ahead. He's going to try and beat everybody. You've got to look out for number one. And then, like, Jerry Lawler's trying to goad him the whole time. And at the end, he just goes, shut up, Lawler.
Yeah. It was a good interview. He talks about, you know, Psycho Sid having this shot. You know, there'll be no excuses when Sid loses. And he had some line about, you know, he's looking out for number one. Otherwise, they'll be stepping on number two or something. And I don't know. It was good.
Yeah, he's definitely... I think now that he's got direction... that he's getting better in the promos. We then get a match. I don't know if it's for the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, it is. Because that's one my first thing that I wrote down. But, like, why would Leaf Cassidy get a title shot here?
That is true.
Leaf Cassidy just lost at the pay-per-view.
But Sable screwed him over.
Yeah, but I mean, why would that give you a title shot?
I mean,
screwed out of a, you know, victory over Mark Miro, who is not the champion and is not in the title picture. I know that was the plan, was for him to be in the title picture, but he's not in the title picture right now. Mark Miro hasn't been for a while. And why would Leaf Cassidy get a title shot here?
Well, the thing is, you know, Undertaker got screwed. He's getting a WrestleMania main event. Leaf Cassidy got screwed. He's getting an Intercontinental Championship match. It's very simple.
Apparently so. I mean, Furnace and LaFon are probably owed, like, what, 12 title shots? Can they just cash them in?
Don't expect them to get it. So, we get this match. It's not a bad match, actually.
I actually enjoyed this match.
It's fascinating to me because we didn't get... Maybe we did, actually. I didn't have Sky at this point, so I've never seen this Raw the full way through. Like, the stuff that we're watching now, I've only seen parts of. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'd never seen this match before. So, I liked it, though. I thought it was decent. Leaf Cassidy is kind of... I feel like if you were watching this in 1997, you would already be able to tell... If he was given a good gimmick, he'd probably get something quite good.
Like, yeah. I'm into Leaf Cassidy, actually. Like, I like him. I think he needs to lose the new rocker gear.
I like his music.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sunny's also the bell ringer.
Yes. That outfit that she's wearing.
I mean, if I was ever going to be a bell ringer, I would definitely have to have a feather boa.
Yes, it is a hot pink, like, sort of halter top deal, a pink skirt. It's like a belly top, so, you know, like, she looks incredible. Of course she does. But then a white feather boa, which part of the feather boa sticks to Rocky Maivia at one point, which is kind of funny, because he's just, like, has a feather on his face.
There are slight boos for Rocky Maivia.
Yeah, you can see people in the crowd giving thumbs down to Rocky. Although there are also at the end of, like, nearer the end of the match, "Go Rocky Go." I had to rewind it to make sure it wasn't "Die Rocky Die" quite yet. It's not. It's "Go Rocky Go." So no. People are still cheering for him.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
Yeah, he's dancy punching his way to the people's hearts. There is a beautiful dancing slap fight at the beginning of this match where both of them are dancing and slapping one another, and it's glorious.
I thought we were going to get one of those, like, completely 90s things where a high cross body ends a match.
Mm-hmm.
Annoyed me. Like, I always thought, like, so, like, say, for example, when Hogan did the leg drop, right? It's not like he just did a leg drop and that was what beat you. What was supposed to beat you was the big boot and then the leg drop, mm-hmm. or the big boot body slam. So it was like a sequence of moves that got you to that point. But the idea that somebody high cross bodying you would pin you is, but Rocky's not going to do that. He gets up because he wants to do the shoulder breaker.
Of course, because the shoulder breaker is definitely the greatest finisher of all time.
And Jim Ross says, I can guarantee you this one's over. Guaranteed. But there, so now, before we talk about the post-match thing, there's a brief point where Jerry Lawler is distracted by an ECW sign in the crowd. Did you know where this was heading before it happened?
No.
Okay, cool.
I did not. So, like, I knew, because obviously, like, again, I know certain things that happen, but I don't know time frames and I don't really know details. You know, for instance, thinking that WrestleMania 13 between Bret and Steve Austin was for the title. Sometimes I get the details wrong. So I know that WWF and ECW interact at some point, but I still don't really know what the interaction is. And I mean, later on, we obviously hear from Paul Heyman himself, but yeah, I didn't really know what was going on. I think in the first episode of Retro Raw we ever did, there were some ECW guys that showed up and they call attention to it. So they're acknowledging ECW, and I'm not really sure why exactly. It was interesting though, because like Lawler takes the ECW rules sign away. The guy has another sign, which cracked me up. Apparently he brought two just in case. But he's going on, like, Lawler has this thing where he has this vendetta against ECW. He's like, 99% of the people in the world have never heard of ECW. Well, they have now, because you just put them on Raw, but whatever. And he compares it to the movie Escape from New York, which I've never seen, but says it's a bunch of has-beens who couldn't make it in the WWF, and they go to ECW, and he says that he... And then it's weird, because he talks about WCW here, too. He says that he has a friend who went to a WCW match, and they tried, in Memphis, and they tried to take a Jerry Lawler sign in, and they took it away from him, and JR's like, we have free speech here, which was really interesting watching in the year 2017, where they take away signs for no reason.
Yeah, well, and the interesting thing is, you've got JR who's kind of trying to be like, don't talk about ECW on air, like, you can't mm-hmm. do this. I thought this was a great promo from Lawler. Like, he was a cunt here.
Yeah.
Like, he was, like, just, like, because when they did the whole ECW invading, so to speak, thing, it's like, there wasn't really a reason for it. There wouldn't really be a reason, but, like, Jerry Lawler is someone who... I can understand his character detesting what ECW stands for. Like, I get it. I completely see that mentality. So it works for me.
And I don't necessarily know why Jerry Lawler would hate ECW. I guess maybe I'm just not as familiar with it.
Well, because Jerry Lawler is a guy who sold out and went to the WWF. He's a hack commentator. And now there's these young sort of misfits who are like hitting each other with chairs and barbed wire and stuff that he would never dare to do to himself. And now they're coming onto his TV show and sort of shoving the signs in his face, trying to get themselves over.
Okay. And yeah, that is interesting. I can definitely see that.
So I think Lawler's the perfect fodder for that to happen, for ECW to come in. Because I don't know if there's anybody else on the roster who would really be able to make a case, or it would feel natural, why they hated them or why they didn't want them there. So, yeah, it worked for me, the promo.
See, and I was just thinking, because I know that Lawler hates Paul Heyman.
Yes, he does. And
in real life, like, Lawler hates Paul Heyman. So that's what I was kind of thinking as Lawler was having his whole interaction. And then obviously later on when he interacts with Paul Heyman, I was like, Lawler's... Because I know that backstage fact, it makes sense to me that, yeah, Lawler would be pissed. But the character stuff I didn't really get before you just explained it to me, but it does make sense now.
And do you know the reason why Jerry Lawler hates Paul Heyman?
Something about the scaffold match, or he wouldn't do a scaffold match.
Yeah, so basically he'd agreed to do it, and they promoted it, and then he bailed on it.
Right.
And that was just...
And that's why he broke his jaw, and... Because I watched the Legends Roundtable, like, that they used to have on that WWE 24 On Demand thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Lawler explains his reasoning, and he just comes off looking like an utter dick about the whole thing. They're like... Because JR's like, did you break his jaw on accident, or did you do it on purpose? He's like, I did it on purpose. And he explains it, and the other guys at the table are like, really? That's it? That's your reasoning? That's why you hate him this much? And Lawler's like, well, yeah. He's the worst.
So we'll see what happens next week when ECW are invited to the Manhattan Center in New York. I'm very interested to have your detailed reaction to this next segment. So I did mean to say yes. Yeah, so Rocky Maivia beat Sleep Cassidy. That's all done. Then we have the Lawler promo about ECW, and now. We have Goldust and Marlena coming out for an interview with Kevin Kelly. Goldust is kind of worshipping Marlena. He's on his knees, kind of, you know, worshipping her. He says that things have gotten personal with him and Hunter Hearst Helmsley. He says that, you know, no amount of money can buy Marlena, and that the only way he would ever get close to her is over Goldust's dead body. And then Kevin Kelly says, well, you know, Marlena, we've not heard from you yet. What do you think about this whole situation and what's happened? And she says, you know, well, Goldust and I like to play games, but I can assure you that he's all man, and he's more of a man than you'll ever be, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Then Hunter comes out. Then Hunter and Goldust kind of brawl after Hunter Hearst Helmsley shoves water in Goldust's face. Get a pedigree to Goldust, and then Marlena finally slaps Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Right in the nose, they say.
Right in the nose. And he then is agitated by that. But then China turns up, again as if she's just a fan, and she ragdolls Marlena around the place before she's taken away by security. So break it all down, all the parts, all the stuff, and let us know what you think.
Well, I mean, they show some footage of, you know, last night's deal. Lawler's continuing to insist that Rocky grabbed Hunter Hearst Helmsley's tights after a bridging German suplex. I'm not super sure how that works. but, you know, oh, Lawler. I mean, Goldust worshipping Marlena, I kind of like the Goldust-Marlena dynamic, because he clearly respects her. She clearly respects him. They have a good thing going. Hunter Hearst Helmsley is the worst for trying to get in the middle of that and have his way with Marlena. Goldust does mention at one point, you know, this is reality, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. This is personal because of the indecent proposal that you made to my Marlena, or something like that. Because, of course, mm-hmm. he has to mention a movie. And I was glad to hear Marlena finally speak, because I've been wanting her to speak, right? Like, I want to hear from her. She does not seem like she wants to get with Hunter Hearst Helmsley. She does not seem to appreciate being carried off by Hunter Hearst Helmsley. She does not seem to appreciate being stolen by Hunter Hearst Helmsley. But I would like to hear her say it, right? And
yep.
Marlena's not very good at speaking, so maybe it's nope. better if she doesn't.
Maybe it's funny, as soon as she grabbed it, because I know her as Terry Runnels in the future.
Right.
Where she's fine. So, like, I forgot that at the beginning it was a bit of a struggle. So as soon as she got the mic, I was like, yeah, we're going to hear from Marlena. Oh, God, we're hearing from Marlena.
From the very first premiere of Goldust and Marlena, there's been speculation and a lot of question about Goldust's masculinity. And then Lawler goes, yeah, and about his manhood, or lack thereof, says Lawler. Because, of course, you know, and then that's when she says, you know, granted, we play a lot of games, but let me go on record right now and say, from his precious golden head to his golden feet, he is oh, man. And Lawler's like, sounds like she knows from experience. Well, of course she does. She's fucking him. They are married. Like, yes, she does know from experience, Lawler. That is accurate. That is what they're saying. Also, as I point out, you can see, like, all of his penis from that bodysuit. So it's not like there's any question that he has one.
What's interesting to me is that, again, from knowing where everything goes, etc., is that if you, it's, they're trying to keep a hold of this character part of the story, where she's the director and he's the movie star, but the story they're telling you is out with that.
Yeah.
And that's confusing, I think.
I think it is kind of confusing. And it also seems like not a lot of stuff is progressed by just this promo, but then obviously Triple H coming down to yell effeminately and then throw a cup of water. A tiny cup, by the way. Like, he grabs this little tiny Dixie cup from the commentary table. I don't know, like, it's basically a sip of water that he throws at Goldust's face. But the China stuff is really intriguing, though. I like the China stuff. I don't necessarily, like, I think it's at the beginning of this that when they show the footage of China, JR says, Marlena was attacked by a man last night. The man was ejected. He will be fined. Which I found very interesting. Because then later on when China shows back up, JR's like, there's that woman again, that huge woman. Like, you just said that it was a man.
Right. Like, yeah, that's problematic.
It is problematic. But, I mean, I like, I love China. Like, I think she's super interesting right now because she just comes in and they're not claiming necessarily that there's any connection between Hunter Hearst Helmsley and China. Like, they asked Hunter Hearst Helmsley about it. I think, did they ask him about that when he had the promo in the match just before this? Because I think he had a backstage promo during Leaf Cassidy versus Rocky My V. I can't remember if that's where they ask him about China or if it's later on, but he...
No, I guess there.
Yeah, and I mean, he says that there's no connection. He doesn't know who that woman is, you know. They're playing it off like China's just a fan from the crowd, which is interesting. I think it's an interesting dynamic, and, you know, they're like, is she in cahoots with Hunter Hearst Helmsley? Is she not? Da-da-da-da-da. So, I mean, I'm intrigued by that chaos, and I definitely want to see more of China.
She's an interesting character. And, but I mean, the funny thing is that there's really no way for Marlena to ever get some comeuppance.
No, not really. Because I mean, she can slap Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and that's about it.
Yeah, because she's never going to be able to take down China. Goldust at this point can't really hit China. You know, because it's this weird thing where China's able to come in and do what she wants, but there's still that. And I think it is a cool dynamic where it's like, I can't hit a woman, but then this woman's like, she's not your sort of typical valet. You know, she is a muscly woman who, like, could feasibly body slam you with ease.
Oh, yeah. Like, she does not look like any of the other women. I mean, the only other women that are represented on screen right now are Sunny, Marlena, Sable. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I'm not missing anyone, am I? Because...
No.
I mean, there's no women's division to speak of. There are no women wrestlers at this point.
And let's go back again to Vince McMahon, at this point, had tried twice to do a women's division.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't work out for him.
And he really did put the effort in with it. You know, like, he tried, and it never really drew... for various reasons. Although, if you've not had a chance to watch the... In the 1995 Survivor Series, they bring in, like, 8 Japanese women to work a Survivor Series tag team match.
I've always meant to check that out.
It is great. Aja Kong is... I can't get enough of Aja Kong. She's great. So, it's basically, like... Bertha Faye, Aja Kong, I'm going to butcher these names, Tomoko Watanabe and Lioness Asuka with Harvey Whippleman in their corner against Alundra Blaze, Kyoko Inui, Saki Hasakawa, and Chaparita Asari. So you've got basically Alundra Blaze and 3 Japanese women against Bertha Faye and 3 Japanese women. And it's fun. It's really good fun. But, like, so at this point, Vince has kind of just been like, okay, the women's division thing isn't really working, so we'll just kind of have the sex sales mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And then China's this kind of like different part of that. Like, she's not really, I mean, she is not being brought in for sex appeal.
No.
That's not her role here. But yeah, we'll talk about China in the coming weeks because it will advance. The Headbangers are out, and Howard Finkel does in fact confirm that he is called Thrasher and not Thrash, as he has been called numerous times.
Including by the owner of the company.
Including by the owner of the company. And who do the Headbangers take on, Sandra?
The Hardy Boys! I did not expect to see the Hardy Boys! Matt and Jeff the Hardy Boys are here to take on the Headbangers. And I don't like the Headbangers, so I was like, go Hardy Boys, yay! But yeah, it was bizarre to see little, like, tiny Matt and Jeff Hardy. How old would they have been at this point?
So at this point, Matt was... Sorry, bear with me, folks. I'm just finding this information out for Sinondra. Matt was 22... No, Matt was 21 here. No, 20, sorry. Matt was 22 and Jeff was 19.
They're so young. They're so little. And they're already pretty Hardys. Good. Baby Hardys.
I loved when, I think it was Thrasher did a clothesline and Jeff Hardy just like flipped and died.
Yeah.
And it's funny because actually one of the things that we had asked Matt on the tour that we did with him, which will be coming up in a clip form on YouTube soon. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes, if you feel so inclined. We've made that URL easier for people to go to.
which is nice.
Which is nice. So we'd asked him about, or I'd asked him about, you know, if you when you were working in WWF and you were kind of younger, like, how did you guys try to stand out? And they had said, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had one spot in every match that we were recognized for. And then, like you see here, Jeff does that clothesline thing and he stands out.
Mm-hmm.
So, good for them.
Like, in terms of, you know, jobber tag teams that we've seen, the Hardy Boys definitely stand out as one of the better jobber tag teams. And that could partially just be because, you know, I know who the Hardy Boys are already, so of course I'm going to pay more attention to them than I am, I don't know, the Grimm Twins or something. But... I mean, I enjoyed this match, pretty much. Like, the Headbangers were the Headbangers, and they were fine. It is kind of annoying that, you know, it seems like any tag team match, we have to cut to interviews. You know, Nation of Domination is standing by because this is a tag team match, so it wouldn't be complete without an interview to completely ignore everything going on in the actual match. but, I mean, the match itself was, it was decent. It was fun. It didn't get super boring.
And the fact that the Hardy Boys have invested in gear, matching gear.
Yes. Are the Hardy Boys in the company at this point?
They are. I think they're signed later in 1997. So okay. At this point, they're still guys brought into the jobs on TV.
Okay. That's what I thought, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Up next, though, it is Take Two. Psycho Sid versus Bret Hart for the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
It is, but we should talk about Farouk.
Yes, go ahead, Farouk.
Because Farouk, you know, says that basically Ahmed's a big front. You know, he lives in a high-rise apartment over Houston, which, you know, Ahmed Johnson told us that he lost his apartment, his girlfriend, and his car. So one of these
liar!
Guys is lying. but Farouk says that Ahmed is the liar. You know, he lives in a high-rise apartment. He drives two cars, not even just one that he lost. He has two cars. You know, he doesn't know what the streets are like. He says something about how you don't have to die to go to hell. You're in it now, and I'm the devil. Not super sure what Farouk is on about, being the devil in hell or something, but apparently all of this leads to a Chicago street fight, because when they go to Chicago for WrestleMania 13, they'll have a Chicago street fight to show Ahmed what the streets are like. So this is where we're having the declaration of the Chicago street fight between Farouk and Ahmed Johnson.
And when they say promised land, they say Farouk.
They do indeed.
That's my motto. Take two, Sid versus Bret for the title. Sid comes out again, full entrance, full regalia. Bret then... Now, talk me through your reaction to So what happens is Brett's backstage, he's walking through, Steve Austin attacks him, they get in a brawl, Sid jumps in, Vince McMahon is there.
Yeah, I noted that, Vince McMahon himself. I think you see Bruce Pritchard at one point too.
You do. So talk me through your reaction of watching, like, did you think it was going to happen now?
No. No, okay. I did not. Because why would you put the match on in the middle of the show? That makes less sense than opening the show. And I saw chaos to open the show. So when they were like, okay, we're going to have the match now, it's like, you're not going to have the match now. I liked the way they did it, though. It was interesting. Bret Hart was doing kind of the Goldberg entrance. They hit his music and he comes out from the locker room door, not just like through Gorilla. So, but I mean, the chaos backstage, Sid leaves the ring to get involved in the brawl too. And Sid's knee seems to be holding up all right. You know, he's doing fine enough to punch Stone Cold Steve Austin, because Sid's getting kind of pissed about this situation now too. He's like, you are ruining my chance, because I want to have my title match and you are ruining this for me, Stone Cold Steve Austin. So Psycho Sid has some issues with Stone Cold Steve Austin at this point too. But yeah, seeing everyone backstage and seeing even Vince McMahon breaking up the fight was really interesting.
There's also a brief point where Sid, like, puts his hand in the face of Vince McMahon and shoves him against the door.
Oh yeah.
Which is great. Now at this point, Vince McMahon has made a decision to step away from commentary to allow JR and Lawler to be the commentators. That is not a decision that stays. But that's his decision. That's his decision for now.
The commentary situation is always just evolving. I never know who's going to be on commentary from one night to the next.
But we do. So we come back. We've got Gorilla Monsoon. In my notes, I just had down for effect, is he going to do anything?
Right?
Now, obviously, I'm sure I've told you this before, but Nitro had a habit of, they would advertise main event matches and they would either not happen or they would go like 2-3 minutes and then there'd be a... somebody would run in, so there's a lot of references to, we're not gonna, you know, bait and switch you here. You're gonna get what you paid for, and that's what WWF would say. So he said that we're gonna get the main event, we're gonna get Sid versus Bret. For whatever reason, he doesn't ban Steve Austin from the building.
That was my question. Why aren't you banning Steve Austin from the building, or at least like putting him in a room with security? Why don't they, like, when we get to the main event, why don't we have loads of security out around the ring? Like, why aren't they doing more to prevent Steve Austin from just attacking again? Because you know that he's going to just attack again.
It's a baffling situation.
Gorilla Monsoon understand. Does not seem very effective as the president of the World Wrestling Federation.
He's not. He is not. So we get that. We're going to get the main event. Then we get pyrotechnics for Flash Funk.
Yeah.
All the pyro. Owen Hart beats Flash Funk in this match with the help from the British Bulldog. Probably Flash Funk's best WWF match so far, in spite of the sloppy finish. I enjoyed it for what it was.
I really liked this match. I thought it was good. I was actually kind of annoyed that they kept cutting away from it for various reasons. Because earlier on...
You don't get a lot of good wrestling in WWF in 97.
You don't. And so I was like, oh, this match is actually good. And then we have to go to commentary to talk to Paul Heyman on the phone, which was fun. Like, I enjoyed hearing randomly from Paul Heyman talking to Jerry Lawler, right? Like, he says he's going to be there Monday at the Manhattan Center. Lawler actually mentions by name. He's like, oh yeah, are you gonna bring the Blue Meanie or Sabu or the Sandman? And he mentions some of the ECW wrestlers. My favorite line, Paul Heyman says, as long as the neighborhood watch doesn't have to be informed that you're in the neighborhood, Paul Heyman says to Lawler.
Oh, Paul Heyman, I love him.
Oh, he's great.
But yeah, Owen gets the win. Like, Bulldog helps Owen get the win by hitting Flash Funk with the Slammy, which then goes into a spinning heel kick and then a very awkward fall and
Well, it was weird because Bulldog hits him with the Slammy. Well, first of all, like, Bulldog sort of ejected Clarence Mason from ringside mid-match because he was like, you're going to cost him the match, you're going to cost him the match. And then Bulldog hits Flash Funk with the Slammy, which is great, like, you know, help Owen win, cheat, dastardly, whatever. But then he also pulls Flash Funk's foot under the rope. Did you see that?
I did.
What in the world?
And it was not done very smoothly.
No. And it didn't end up mattering because Owen still wins the match.
Yep.
So that was kind of confusing. But, I mean, the match itself was good, and I enjoyed it, and there was good wrestling, and I wish we could have seen more of the good wrestling. Also, during this match, Stone Cold Steve Austin was standing by, and he's pissed off backstage because he says he won the Royal Rumble fair and square, and he should be the WWF champion because, again, he mentions there's no instant replay rule here in the WWF. So he won the Royal Rumble fair and square, Kenny. I mean, who can dispute this? And he talks about the organization. You know, this organization holds him back because he isn't full of glitz and glamour for publicity shots. Can't talk today. But, you know, he's basically just pissed off and thinking that the company's holding him back. And, you know, the final four match should never have happened. He should be the World Wrestling Federation champion because Shawn Michaels hurt his knee and had to go home. And, you know, he's the rightful winner of the Royal Rumble. So he's quite upset about this whole situation. Gorilla Monsoon's not doing anything to calm down Steve Austin. No one is doing anything to be like, maybe you should leave, sir. He just gives his promo and then he's pissed. And I wonder if he's going to try and interfere again.
I'm very sorry. As we're talking here, I've just been sent something on Twitter. Can I rant to you very briefly before we continue with Retro Raw?
Because yeah.
I was gonna try and make it like I hadn't been just sent something, but my face could not contain like what I was sent. So apparently, Linda Hogan put out a tweet the other day with a picture of the burning towers of the World Trade Center from 9/11. With the caption, "Let them in?" Question mark, question mark.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So what? Let them in? Question mark, question mark. Followed by, I just need to get this tweet up again because she fucking tweets all the time. My God. Suppose when you've got all Hulk's money, you can. Followed by her say, oh, she's literally, I can't get to the tweet. There's some, oh yeah, let them in, question mark, question mark. I guess everyone forgot about this. This is coming from the woman, right, who took 70% of the money from the guy who made her all the gave her all the stuff that she got in life, then tried to say that he pumped his best pal, and then wrote a book about her life, but wanted to keep the surname that he had in wrestling for herself.
Because that benefits her.
Because that benefits her. What a cretin of humanity she is.
Ugh, that is the worst.
Because, yeah, everybody's... see these people that... anyway, I'm not going to go into it. Sorry, back to Retro Raw. Where were we?
Well, we were talking about...
She should be killed. She should be murdered in cold blood. She is the worst human.
I don't know if I would go so far as to advocate murder, because now if she gets murdered, like, people are going to be like, oh, Kenny McIntosh is behind this.
I don't care that much to do it. I'm just endorsing it. <It's all. laughs> no, she's fine. She thinks she's 21, but, you know, that's cool.
She is incorrect.
She's incorrect. She is 56. there's nothing wrong with being 56, Linda. But you know that's what you do, don't you? Whenever you're going through a divorce, you go and date one of your daughter's pals from high school.
I've never been divorced, nor do I have a daughter.
Fucking Linda Hogan.
Fucking Linda Hogan.
Anyway, where were we on Retro Raw? Sorry, I got distracted there. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I'm closing all other tabs. I am not going to be interrupted again.
We had a WrestleMania 13 ad, and then we had Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Bart Gunn because, you know, that match had to happen, apparently.
Is it just me, or did Bart Gunn... like, he needs a haircut at this point.
He kind of does need a haircut. Also, maybe a personality would be great. Oh, it's here where they show China footage, and they wonder if Triple H is in cahoots with this person. And Honky Tonk Man has joined commentary, because Triple H versus Bart Gunn needed to get worse. And so... this is where JR...
Honky Tonk Man has to find the right protege. He needs to find someone who can shake, rattle, and roll. That takes a lot of time and effort.
I know. Apparently he does. Well, he's looking at the wrong gun, isn't he? But... how long does this go on?
I think he debuts in April.
Oh, man. Because I'm real tired of the Honky Tonk Man and his scouting already. But... Yeah, this is where JR interviews Hunter Hearst Helmsley about this woman who, you know, attacked Marlena. And this is where he says, I don't know who she is. Women all over the world love me. He's going on about, you know, how everyone wants to be with him because he's Hunter Hearst Helmsley. He then says, I don't know who this woman is. And frankly, I don't care. This woman.
Wow.
Yeah.
This woman.
This woman, he doesn't know who this woman is, and Honky Tonk Man is anxious to hear the report from Dr. Andrews because apparently Shawn Michaels was on his list, because the Honky Tonk Man is scouting Shawn Michaels, who I'm sure would be thrilled to be the Honky Tonk Man's protege. I mean, Kenny, can you imagine Shawn Michaels? Shawn Michaels, well, star of the world. Don't you think that he would love to be mentored by the Honky Tonk Man?
Well, given the fact that he didn't like to be mentored by his mentor,
right,
Jose Lothario, like, I can't imagine what he would do to the Honky Tonk Man.
Oh, man. I just love the idea that Honky Tonk Man is trying to court Shawn Michaels, and Shawn Michaels just like, fuck off, I'm so above you.
I still love when, it was one of the January episodes that we covered when, was it December, and Bret Hart was in commentary with Honky Tonk Man. And Vince was like, so, Brett, are you open to being Honky Tonk Man's protege? And Brett just laughs.
Yeah, it's like, no. Fuck nope. This.
So this match with Bart and Hunter is fine, but then Goldust runs out, Triple H bolts through the stands at the speed of lightning, and as Goldust is, like, running literally up the stairs of the arena, like, there's people, like, obviously trying to, like, touch the guys as they're going up and mm-hmm. stuff, and Jerry Lawler just shouts, these people are interfering! Arrest them all!
Yeah, because he's like, they're trying to stop Hunter Hearst Helmsley from getting away from Goldust. You know, he's basically going on about how Hunter Hearst Helmsley has had it so unfair, right? Because, mm-hmm. of course, he's had it so unfair. Because Rocky Maivia had the tights, damn it! And that's why Hunter Hearst Helmsley isn't the champion. And Bart Gunn here is announced as the winner, and you can't even hear his music, because instead of Bart Gunn's music to celebrate his win, they just play the Raw theme. Because they're previewing Brett versus Sid again.
I was
going to
say, I feel so bad about that. Like, I mean, I'm not the biggest Bart Gunn fan in the world, but like, he wins a match.
He should at least get his music played. He didn't get an entrance, right? Like, poor Bart Gunn.
then we go directly to Dr. James Andrews, the orthopedic surgeon to the stars,
to find out about Shawn Michaels' career-ending knee injury, potentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially career ending. So apparently this is a chronic problem. It dates back about 5 years. He tore something. I don't remember the details. Dr. James Andrews is recommending no surgery. They will rehab at home and be reassessed in 4 to 6 weeks. And he believes that Shawn Michaels will be fine to resume his wrestling career.
His wrestling career. Not his wrestling career. His wrestling.
He says wrestling very...
So my notes here were, Dr. James Andrews, wouldn't you know, 4 to 6 weeks and you'll be able to wrestle again. Prick.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much my notes. That's my analysis for that.
I concur.
Third time's a charm, Sandra.
Yes. I love that we got to hear Psycho Sid's music 3 times on this show. 4 times, actually.
I love that Bret Hart, by the third time, was like, I'm not putting the jacket on again.
He's like, fuck this. I just want to have this match.
Yeah. And the match was pretty good for a Sid match. You know, because Sid is someone who definitely needs to be carried more than
be
the man.
Needs to be wrestled around.
Yes. And they have a pretty good match. And then obviously, you know, you get Bret trying to work over the leg that Steve Austin chop blocked. Which is funny to me, like, Steve Austin chop blocked Sid, right? Which is a move nowadays that, like, doesn't do anything. And in this, Bret Hart's working over it 2 hours later.
Oh, yeah, because Sid is still... Sid's attempts at selling, just bless him. He's so bad at all of this. Every once in a while, he'll remember to limp, but then he'll forget. But then, whenever he remembers, it's like his leg is about to buckle and give out, and he makes... the best Sid faces in the entire world.
The way I like to describe Sid as a wrestler is like, say if I wanted to become a musician, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite good with social media. I know how to sell things. And like, everything around the singing, I would be pretty confident I'm quite good at. But the one problem is that I can't sing. and everything around the wrestling Sid is great at. It's just the wrestling that he's kind of like you say, if you work around him, he's fine. If you don't work around him, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But he's best. So
I love him. I mean, this match started out kind of slow. It took Bret Hart a few minutes to start working over the leg, and that's when I think it got kind of good, because it started out kind of boring. And I'm always just amused by Sid's mere presence, so it's fine. Like, I don't mind that it was kind of boring. But when Bret Hart starts going for the leg, the match got a lot better. And I love a good figure four around a ring post, right? Like, I always love mm-hmm. that. The commentary team is acting like they've never seen this before. So my question to you, have they never seen this before?
No. This is the first time in WBF.
Wow.
Bret Hart kind of brought it in, so... Or unless, like, somebody's going to tweet me and say, like, it happened at a Coliseum video in 1991. Well, I mean, I don't get that. I don't recall it happening before Bret, is what I would say.
Okay.
He basically takes it and makes it his own. I think it looks great.
It does.
Once it's locked in. But Sid would be on the outside, and then Steve Austin interferes in the crowd again, and Sid just batters him.
Absolutely, I love that. Steve Austin runs in and Sid just punches him down to the ground and he's dead.
Yep, completely dead. And then Bret Hart ends up getting the upper hand, and Bret Hart has the sharpshooter locked in. He's going to beat Psycho Sid and retain his championship. When Steve Austin gets on the apron, smacks Bret Hart in the head with a chair, and then...
Which Earl Hebner does not see, because he's having a very intense conversation with Psycho Sid down on the mat about tapping or not tapping.
Yes. And then I do really want to commend JR and Lawler. I really love the call of this ending. Especially the fact that, like, Lawler is, like, so behind Sid to win and beat the guy that he used to feud with. And JR's calling it as if it's fucking the main event at WrestleMania. Sid ends up getting the powerbomb. He wins. Sid is the champion again. He's a two-time WWF champion. He has the belt. Everybody's going crazy. We hear the gong. The Undertaker comes out. Sid lies the belt down the ground. We have a face-off. It's Taker and Sid, main event WrestleMania for the championship. What did you think of the main event, the way it played out, and all that jazz?
Well, like I said, I thought Bret Hart was going to win this match. So... Mm-hmm. When Steve Austin hit Bret Hart with the chair, and, you know, after hearing throughout the show them talking about how The Undertaker's going to face the champion, I was like, Sid wins this? What is going on? Ah, I'm so excited because Psycho Sid is the champion again, right? Like, I'm not guessing that Psycho Sid versus The Undertaker is a great match. Not necessarily something that I think is going to be amazing to see, but I'm really excited that Psycho Sid is the champion, and Steve Austin is just such a prick. Like, he's such a prick, because what I expected to happen was Stone Cold Steve Austin to cause a DQ or something, and for there to actually be a DQ. I didn't expect there to be an actual finish to this, because I thought Austin was just going to interfere, and there would be some sort of shenanigans, Bret Hart would retain, and somehow that would, I don't know, lead to something else. I don't know. I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but yeah, Psycho Sid powerbombs Bret Hart, gets the pin, and I was really, just really excited. And the Undertaker-Sid face-off is kind of cool. I mean, they're both humongous, and Sid's eyes are bugging out of his head, and it felt big. This main event of the show felt really big, and maybe it felt bigger because we'd tried to see it twice before, and this time we finally got it, so both of them are like, no, we are having this freaking match, man. Like, we're not letting anything stop us from having this match. And, I mean, I assume that Bret Hart is going to be very unhappy about Steve Austin costing him the World Wrestling Federation Championship belt, and it will set in place, you know, set in motion things going to WrestleMania 13. I'm excited about this. I like this story a lot.
It's fun to think that, like, for you especially, given the fact that you've not seen this stuff before, is, like, you're essentially going to watch the build for two WrestleManias at one time.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting the current one, you're getting the one from back in the day.
Yeah.
So, happy times for Sondra.
And we're finally talking about WrestleMania, too. Like, we're having WrestleMania 13 ads where they talk about people being legends, and we're on mm-hmm. the road. It doesn't feel nearly, obviously, like WrestleMania back then wasn't quite the production it is today. So it doesn't feel nearly as big or epic building to WrestleMania, but it's still a big deal.
Yeah, WrestleMania Heat.
Yeah.
And this is the first WrestleMania in the history of the event where they have used the number rather than the Roman numerals to decipher the number of the event.
Oh, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
So is it called WrestleMania Heat?
No, Heat's just like the tagline.
Okay.
So like WrestleMania 3, the tagline was bigger, badder, better. WrestleMania 5 was the Mega Powers Explode. WrestleMania 6 was the Ultimate Challenge. So they have all these kind of taglines, but it's not actually like... It's not like In Your House Final Four.
Okay.
Why
did they stop doing taglines? Because they don't do taglines anymore. I mean, I call it WrestleMania Sun coming up, but...
I love a tagline. I don't know why they don't do it anymore. I wish they did. And it's ironic that, like, if when you watch WrestleMania 12 and you see Savio Vega versus Stone Cold Steve Austin with Ted DiBiase as his manager with the $1 million championship belt, I don't know if anybody would have thought that a year later he would be in the position he is.
Yeah. Because, I mean, yeah, Sid versus The Undertaker is going to be the main event, but Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin is the main event.
100%.
You know, like, and I'm not just saying that because I know how the match goes and because I know that it's one of the most iconic matches of all time and all of that. I'm just going based on the story. That's the most interesting story here, by far.
Yeah, without question. It's the most interesting storyline in the company.
I don't think they do a very good job of explaining why The Undertaker gets the title match. Like, I understand that it's because he's screwed, but I don't think they ever actually call that out on commentary. Like, they just say, oh yeah, The Undertaker's gonna face the champion.
I was hoping they were gonna explain that a little bit more. That was a bit of a disappointment for me, but apart from that, big thumbs up for me for this one.
Yeah, finally a thumbs up show where I was still exhausted watching it because I had to watch it after work and whatnot, but it was enjoyable. Like, I...
And then next week is just more chaos.
I love chaos. Chaos is the best.
The Manhattan Center, home of Monday Night Raw for the first 9 months of its existence. And it's going back home. And
ECW has been invited. I'm very curious to see what happens there.
And also next week on Monday Night Raw, we finally get the arm wrestling match between Sonny and Marlena.
Oh, man.
So yeah, it's another big impactful show, and then we have to deal with the horrible Germany episodes. But
where we
horrible.
Get the finals of the European Championship. Oh yeah, that was one of my questions because they say Owen Hart's going to be in the European Championship tournament or something. The finals are being broadcast on Raw from Berlin. Where are the rest of the matches being held?
Oh, it's all in Berlin over like a couple of nights.
Okay.
But in the UK, there was actually a European Championship Tour special, rather than it being on Raw.
Oh, interesting.
So, anyway, Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And for all the glorious bonus Patreon content that Kenny detailed at the beginning of the show, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes.
So thanks very much for listening. The Final Four review is up now on Patreon. David and I will be back on Tuesday with the Raw rundown, where we're going to talk about Big Show versus Braun Strowman.
And is that whatever. Happening on... Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yep. And then Sandra and I will be back next week on SmackDown with the fallout from the Battle Royal and Nikki and Natalya in a Falls Count Anywhere and Naomi and Alexa Bliss in the women's title match and all the stuff that's going on.
I'm so excited about SmackDown right now.
So, yeah, everything's looking fun on Raw, on SmackDown, on Retroland. So, good times ahead.
It's a lovely time in wrestling.
It is. So we will see you soon. Thanks for listening. And tweet us if you have any thoughts on this or that you want to share. And also, I only just listened to it 5 minutes ago, but congratulations to Sandra for putting together the excellent intro to Thursday Raw Thursday.
Oh, yeah, I didn't tell you I did that, did I?
No, I didn't know. But also, if you listen to the SmackDown summary this past week, I encourage you to go right to the end and listen to an unedited conversation that Sondra and I had before we went on air, where she rants about the Bayley situation.
I've gotten some pretty good feedback to that on Twitter as well. I thought it was too good not to include, because it was recorded, actually. So I was like, why not put it in at the end?
It's
like
great.
A little Easter egg.
Okay, have a good weekend, everyone. Bye.
Bye.